This episode of the Case for Safety podcast is sponsored by Safety 2024. Registration is now open for Safety 2024 in Denver. Join us Wednesday, August 7th through Friday, August 9th to connect with your safety community and get up to speed on the latest knowledge and innovations in the field. Learn more and register at safety.assp.org. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Case for Safety podcast. I'm your host, Scott Fowler. Thank you so much for joining us. Well, we're coming up on the National Safety Stand Down to Prevent Falls in Construction, which will be taking place next week. So we wanted to take this opportunity to talk about how you can improve your fall protection and prevention program. And here to share his insights on that, I'm happy to welcome Russell Duren. Russell is Lead Safety Specialist, Quality Assurance at Pro Group Management. Russell, welcome. Great to have you on the show.
Scott, oh my gosh, I am excited to be here. I've been listening since a long time. And so it's just, it's a thrill to be able to talk about this hazard that's very near and dear to my heart on this stage. So thank you.
Well, thank you. Appreciate you you taking the time to come on. And yeah, very excited to talk about this topic. It's a big topic. It's something we consistently see, you know, on when we see the BLS data and, you know, and OSHA citations and things like that. So, yeah, but before we kind of get into, you know, how organizations, safety professionals can get where they need to go, I thought we'd kind of take a look at where things are at, you know, the current state of, you know, fall protection and fall prevention.
You know, I think that anyone that knows me well would say that I'm a pretty reckless optimist. In this conversation, it's not about doom and gloom, but I really believe we have work to do. I think as a country, as an economy, as a workplace culture, we are too willing to assign workers and then try to control exposures with potentially catastrophic or fatal outcomes. So there's light on the horizon, but we have work to do.
Definitely. And part of this conversation stems from an article you recently contributed to for Professional Safety Journal about why there needs to be, you know, a paradigm shift in, you know, the world of fall protection and prevention. So, you know, when you look at where things are and where we need to go, you know, why do you think there needs to be that shift in the way things are done and the way we look at things?
So you mentioned the BLS data in your intro, and I think that that is a key indicator. If we look at the overall fall fatality trend line, that's steeper than our workforce growth line over the same period. If we can find a couple years where we have downward trends, but if we look at a much bigger scale, I use 1995 as the introduction of 1926 subpart M. I use 1995 as like a starting point. And if we look at the overall fatality trend line from 95 until now, we are unfortunately having more American workers die, or they're dying from falls at a higher rate than our workforce is growing. And this comes despite a massive growth in the regulatory structure, the growth in consensus standard guidance. If we look at how many ANSI standards touch falls, that's over 10 times growth. And then I would not be surprised if PPE sales have cleared $1 billion, but it's conservatively 3 times growth in PPE sales over that same period. So we have growth in a bunch of these things that touch falls, but we also have an unacceptable growth line in fall fatalities themselves. 2022's 865 fatalities, fall fatalities, was the third highest in decades. Only 2017 was 887, I believe, and 2019 was 880. So that's our most recent BLS data shows that we need a paradigm shift.
Most definitely. And kind of to help kind of facilitate that shift. I'm glad you mentioned PPE, and we'll get into to talking about that in a little bit. But where we could kind of start with, you know, with the design of work itself. I know, you know, using prevention through design offers a lot of opportunities, you know, to, you know, change the way tasks are done, making it so workers don't have to be at height to do certain tasks, those types of things. So when you think about, you know, prevention through design, what role can that play in improving safety for workers at height?
I like this concept a lot, and I know that I have a lot to develop my own competency here. And I think that my experience is probably fairly common among safety professionals and among designers. When I mentioned the growth in the regs, the standards, the PPE, the one thing I didn't quantify is the regulatory growth, but that probably exceeds the two other categories. The crazy thing, though, is that our regulations treat all controls as equal. We don't see the hierarchy of controls effectively expressed anywhere in 1910 or 1926. We have the 2016 Federal Register commentary for 19 subpart D's revision. I basically think that it's risk agnostic. We can't take a position. We can't know what's better. So we have no legal requirement to pursue higher order controls. But what I love is that ANSI Z359.2's approach to the hierarchy controls says, if the regulators won't commit to some level of preference, we will. And so I start to get excited about prevention through design when I'm in the field and I see these little wins, and I want to know how we can expand that. An example that I give is that I visit construction sites all over Nevada. In northern Nevada, it's pretty common to see the HVAC ductwork run through the flooring or the crawl space. And here in southern Nevada, where I spend a lot more time, I've responded to way too many incidents from HVAC personnel falling through the trusses or falling through the rafters as they run it through the attic. So I'm not an HVAC pro, I'm not a framing or a building code expert, but I see those little wins. And we do see that kind of thinking paying off big time in other developed countries. The UK has their CDM regulations that put prevention through design into the building process before supplies are ordered, before the first tool is picked up. So we can take lessons from things like UK's CDM and ANSI's prevention through design consensus standard.
Along those same lines, you talked about the hierarchy of controls, and something you mentioned in the article is, you know, safety professionals and employers moving away from an over-reliance on PPE. How do you think, you know, both of those groups can, you know, better utilize the hierarchy of controls so it's not, you know, just jumping right to PPE, you know, as the first line of defense when it really should be the last?
I think it comes down to getting your hands on Z359.2. I admit my bias, but I think that standard is the absolute bang for the buck in the consensus standards universe. I briefly mentioned that point two includes this concept of preference when it articulates the hierarchy of controls, something in our regulations don't do. So fully embracing 359.2 includes a commitment to seek higher order controls. I also think that the program roles outlined in 359.2 would go a long way towards quitting over-reliance on PPE. The Managed Fall Protection Program approach includes key guidance on employee roles within a company-wide effort to control this hazard, because we know it can't just be the safety professional trying to control this. So if we look at 29 CFR and their definitions of competent person, qualified person, those are great. They're easy to memorize, but there's so much more to what those roles perform, and it's really well articulated in 359.2. So when you have your whole company aligned on really robustly taking advantage of knowing what an authorized person needs to know, of a competent person making the decisions and evaluations they need to, of knowing when you need to call in a qualified person, and of having a program administrator that kind of has this 30,000-foot view, PPE use becomes much more judicious when it is used, and it probably is, PPE use probably is going to decline or be dialed back a little bit, because all of those roles working together are going to kind of take a de facto prevention through design and higher order controls approach. I've just seen too many falls in construction. They stem from lack of competent person pre-task assessment or lack of a program administrator selecting, ordering the correct fall arrest device that's appropriate for that field application. If you want to ask if PPE is used well, think about uses, limitations, restrictions. And so if we have to use PPE, we will be relying on it in the proper way, and we won't be over-relying. We'll be relying on the proper way if we consistently think about use, limitations, and restrictions. And that's articulated in a 359.2 managed fall protection approach.
You talk, you know, about having, you know, your competent person on the job site. Do you feel like, you know, a lot of this stems from those on the job site not having a proper understanding of the project and what's needed? Or, you know, you mentioned not having the right PPE, or just that there needs to be more work done up front so that everybody understands the project, so then you can kind of put some of those prevention through design principles in place?
I think that each one of those is a major factor. I think that competent persons don't understand the gravity of their role. Whether we're talking skilled labor or unskilled labor in construction, and also the competent person exists in general industry settings as well, they don't understand the gravity of the role, or there just may be too much management focus on production for them to even be able to exercise that authority. And the competent person is the bridge between getting that goal for safe work that has been articulated and getting that goal to be carried through until the project's completion or the task's completion. The competent person is so critical, and they are the bridge between ideals and the finished product for safe work.
Something you mentioned earlier that plays a role in all this was the regulatory environment, the regulatory changes over time. And something you mentioned in the article is enforcement. I mean, you know, what role enforcement can play in helping organizations improve that fall protection program?
This is one that I really wrestle with, but I have much more anecdotal evidence than I care to dwell on of companies counting enforcement penalties as a cost to doing business. I've seen it in, you know, companies directly that maybe I've consulted for in the past, or I've seen it in companies that I've worked for before my current position. I've seen it, and I get it, you know, just from reading the headlines, you can tell. So the enforcement penalties are just a cost of doing business. OSHA's Severe Violator Enforcement Program has been around for decades, maybe longer, but it hasn't made a dent because it catches repeat offenders. In 2023, OSHA released a memo about a concept called instance-by-instance citations. And I think that represents a lot of potential as an effective step to get the attention of employers who are just budgeting for penalties as a cost of doing business. But that was 2023. I mean, I think that a lot of good can come out of instance-by-instance citations. Unfortunately, how many thousands of workers have died since then working for employers who budget for penalties? So I'm hesitant to really prescribe like a regulatory agenda or specific percentages on penalty dollar increases. I do think that OSHA enforcing what's already on the books with tools it already has, such as instance by instance, can make an impact, while at the same time giving American employers a chance to take this hazard more seriously. I'm not ready to say that we need to be like the UK, where one false citation can close your business. I'm not ready to go there, but I think that things like instance by instance and you know, just really enforcing what is there instead of just hoping that we can shoot a penalty citation across the bow and they'll pay attention next time. I know OSHA has room to move employers forward within their existing structure.
Now, with that instance by instance, I mean, just based on the name, I imagine they're handling it on, you know, a case by case basis, and determining the citation based on the circumstances?
So the instance-by-instance memo basically articulates that if you have five workers on the roof that are unprotected, there's five citations. So each exposed worker can result in a citation. So one serious citation for Bob, one serious citation for Jane, onward.
You know, we've talked about, you know, the competent person, the employer, the different groups. So when you think about the safety professional's role in all this, you know, how can, you know, the safety professionals out there really make an impact in this area to, you know, try to improve their programs and, you know, prevent these types of things from happening?
There's a lot. And I'm going to switch from the third person to the first person for this because I take my development very seriously. I need to get a bigger toolbox. I need to continually be working on building a bigger toolbox of fall prevention and protection controls. I once had to help an aviation mechanic with a tough fall exposure. They were servicing the engines on, I forget the model, but the engines were up on the little shelves that stick out from the tail. And it is a super expensive plane. And so they weren't going to, they didn't want to like attach any kind of fall arrest devices to the plane temporarily. They were very antsy about getting any equipment close to the plane. We ended up essentially coming up with what was a specialized aviation scaffolding application. But that process was so good for me to get my hands dirty with underutilized solutions. So the first thing that me as a safety professional needs to do in this process is I need to keep building my toolbox. I also think that balancing the postures of humble inquiry and being an empowering subject matter expert are important. So the gentleman, Edgar Schein, talked a lot about this concept of humble inquiry. And I don't have this memorized. I pulled aside his quote in preparation for this conversation. Humble inquiry is the fine art of drawing someone out, of asking questions to which you do not already know the answer, of building a relationship based on curiosity and interest in the other person. Who doesn't want to know that someone's curious about them? So when I go to an exposed worker, and I'm not there to wag my finger at, your harness is too loose. I'm there with genuine curiosity and interest in them. I'm going to get them to open up to me and really tell me what makes the job hard, what controls are a pain in the butt, why don't they want to use certain controls, etc. So humble inquiry is half the equation. But then Sam Guillardo had an excellent class that I took at the conference formerly known as Seminar Fest. But it was on line management ownership of safety processes. And so Sam says no organization can achieve operational excellence without line management's leadership in balancing safety and production. What goes behind this is the safety professional is the subject matter expert who empowers and supports that line leader. So balancing humble inquiry with an empowering subject matter expert is something that I need to continually be pushing myself to do better at. The third prong that I really need to make sure I'm working hard at is being able to make the business case. I feel like I've been very, very fortunate to be the recipient of good mentoring and professional development on the technical side of this hazard, and where I'm really looking to develop myself, and I think a lot of us can be in the same boat, is being able to make that business case. And we can learn a lot from leaders we have here in society about earning our seat at the prevention through design table and making the business case for the changes that need to happen to control this hazard. The last thing that I would say is to continually seek community and compare ideas. ASSP Community's website is great. ASSP's LinkedIn team does a phenomenal job. We also have organizations like the International Society for Fall Protection. Tom Kramer does a fantastic job with that organization. Connect with ISFP on LinkedIn. And quick little teaser, watch for a fall symposium. It's going to be amazing. But between ASSP and organizations like ISFP, seek community and realize that I need to realize I'm not in this alone. There can be lonely days, but seek community.
That's a great thing to remember, that the ASSP can be that community that you can go to for support, for, you know, encouragement, for, you know, as you mentioned, just throwing ideas out and, you know, helping you get the information you need to do your job better. Anything else you'd like to add about improving fall protection and prevention as we wrap up?
With what's coming up in the next week or so, if you haven't already heard about the national campaign to prevent falls in construction, I just want to tip my helmet to CPWR, NIOSH, NORA, and OSHA, that large partnership. StopConstructionFalls.com is a treasure trove of English and Spanish resources for help empowering any employer to find something they can do to improve 1% on controlling gravity for their employees. So make big use of StopConstructionFalls.com, not only during the stand down, but year round. If you're an employer or if you're a safety professional who just doesn't feel fully equipped, tons of great resources there.
Absolutely. Definitely encourage folks to take a look at those. And to your point, you know, this is something we got to think about every day. We, you know, we focus on it during the stand down, but it's got to be a focus throughout the year to help prevent falls, prevent injuries, prevent fatalities. Because, and, you know, bringing those BLS and those OSHA numbers back down, because that's what it's all about.
That's it. Send more workers home at the end of the day. Let's reverse that trend.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much again, Russell, for coming on. This is such an important topic that I hope, you know, our listeners take time to think on, not only next week, but as we said, throughout the year, to help prevent these falls in construction. So thank you so much again.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thanks so much, Scott.
We hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Case for Safety podcast. Be sure to subscribe on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, and be sure to leave a review to help others find the show. You can also connect with us at ASSP.org. We'll see you next time.